Right, today is April 12th. Yes, April 12th, 2013. This is an interview with Rosemarie Carbino. Is that how you say your last name? We're here at Steenbach Memorial Library inside the UW-Madison Archives, and my name is Troy Reeves, and I'm with the UW-Madison Archives. Rosemarie, for sound quality purposes, could I get you to say your name, your full name, and spell your last name?
Okay. Rosemarie Carbino, C-A-R-B-I-N-O.
Thank you. All right, so as I told you before we turned this on, we're going to talk about the first question, which is, why come to UW in 1970?
Okay, I was invited by telephone by the then head of the Department of Social Work, the famous Martin Loeb, L-O-E-B, to provide a fresh breeze from the East and come teach the remainder of a 1 year of a five-year contract to teach child welfare in a rural county in Wisconsin. I was astonished to get an invitation for a job I had never applied for, and I only vaguely knew of Madison as a place that there was anti-war discord. But I had only 12 days to make my decision about doing this or not and to come out and teach. I decided why not. It was, after all, the 1970s. And I arrived here in mid or late September 1970, just after the bombing at Sterling Hall.
Okay.
My teaching responsibilities were based in Dodge County, so I did 2 or 3 days a week commuting to Juneau, Wisconsin, with a small field training unit of 6 students at the time.
Thank you, Rosemarie, for that. So from what I know of the email you sent, you were working... Were you working professionally in Connecticut when this job was offered to you?
I had given notice at my agency and was finishing my work, or had finished it, and had moved back from Hartford to Greenwich, Connecticut, with the intention of staying with and helping my family and hanging out on our local beach, but that never happened. Darn.
So where you were at in Connecticut, was there any Vietnam protests that you knew of or were involved in?
The newspapers generally carried some notices of anti-war issues. I was not paying a great deal of attention to them. My boyfriend at the time mentioned them to me when I told him about the Madison, Wisconsin offer.
Okay.
But I was unprepared for the intensity of what is now called the war at home when I got here.
So let's move on to that then. What were your initial impressions about Madison, either Madison or the UW-Madison campus, however you want to approach that answer?
One of my first impressions is that they're all crazy here. Everybody is crazy. The faculty is crazy. The demonstrators are crazy. The police and National Guard were here at the time are crazy. The students are acting crazy. I've just come from a place where, in a children's treatment center, we knew who was supposed to be the professionals and who was supposed to be sane and who was supposed to be okay to be crazy. And out here, they're all crazy. My first impression.
Did you, you said you you worked actually in Dodge County the first year?
The first year, and then moved into Dane County the second year.
Okay. So you weren't living in Madison the first year?
I was living in Madison.
Okay. Okay. So you were commuting to Juneau, you said?
Yes.
Okay. Where did you live in Madison that first year?
On the northeast side of the city, so I could get an early Head Start out in the mornings.
So when you came here, did you know anyone?
I knew no one. I ran into, eventually, some people I did know, but I came knowing no one.
Okay. So when you weren't driving, commuting and working, what sort of things were you doing to get to know Madison or get to know the people in Madison?
I would say early on that the first, and this is, what, 70, 45 or more years ago, was a blur of basically survival. Some of it was because Wisconsin was having one of its worst winters in years, with very high snowfalls, and with the Highway 151 not yet constructed to Juneau, we were using the old 151, single lane, in fog, in ice storms, and I learned soon there was also a student truck driver training school along that road. Mm-hmm. So some of the survival was the weather and the transportation, and some of it also had to do with getting into faculty, learning the mental retardation field, which was a new part of my assignment, although I knew child welfare. So I think that while I was on campus, I would be spending a lot of time going to centers with information on developmental disability, doing lots of reading and conferring. I don't remember much social activity.
Okay. So was it after that first year that you then moved on to this campus to do your work?
I was still based off campus because the School of Social Work at the time was in very tiny quarters, a small building on Observatory Hill in a house which barely managed to hold on to a little library space and some offices for senior faculty. The rest of us were scattered around wherever space could be, and my office space was across Lake Mendota at Dane County Human Services once we moved here. However, we came to campus for faculty meetings and to teach classes. So I was on campus, but not based here.
Is my geography right? Would that be fairly close to where you were living? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
For those first several years.
Okay.
And a stunning change from driving to Juneau.
I would say probably a stunningly nice change from driving.
Yes, yes.
So you talked about surviving that first year, coming here thinking that everyone's crazy. I want to back up to a couple of events in 1970, one that happened here and one that happened somewhere else, just to sort of get your general thoughts. And so we'll take them chronologically, which would be May 1970, which was the shooting at Kent State. You still were in Connecticut at that time, but I'm wondering if you heard anything about that and what your thoughts were about that.
I did hear about it. I, like much of the nation, was horrified. And I remembered back to my own naive belief that this would not happen in America. In previous years, I had traveled to Mexico, where I happened to be in Mexico City when the students took over the university. They commandeered all the public buses, circled the university, and took it over. And there were some shootings from Mexican authorities that did kill some students. And I remember telling people at the time that would never happen in America, just because I had a better feeling about our respect for law and human life. So one of my memories at the time was a kind of embarrassment at how naively proud I was when this happened.
You know, this reminds me that I should ask another question about a seminal event of the 60s, which would be John F. Kennedy's President Kennedy's assassination. Mm-hmm. What do you remember about where you were and what you thought when you heard about that event?
Mm-hmm. So I was in Washington, D.C. at the time in graduate school. On the campus of Catholic University. And I remember thinking, I wonder if there's just a quiet place to go for reflection. And I thought, perhaps one of those huge mausoleum-like buildings that have chapels in them. But within minutes, thousands of students flooded into those chapels. So I was wrong about a quiet spot. Like everyone else, we watched the television incessantly. And I think this is a memory that still surprises me. I was in downtown D.C. one night and on a very crowded area. And I think I passed Jackie Kennedy, looking distraught and all by herself, no Secret Service, no people accompanying her in any way, kind of in the crowd. And I thought, oh my goodness, is this my imagination? How would she be allowed to be out, especially at this time? Otherwise, with the nation, I watched the TV and mourned for the loss of the president.
So one of the reasons why you and I are here is because I sent out an advertisement in the Retiree Association newsletter about people's thoughts about the Vietnam era, about Sterling Hall. You weren't here yet when the bombing occurred, but I assume once you got here, or maybe, you know, before you got here, you'd heard about it. I'm wondering when you heard about it and what you thought, what your thoughts were about that.
Let me try to remember. I think I arrived within a month of that bombing. So I would have arrived at a time of considerable transition for me and probably didn't spend much time. Well, what do you know the date?
Yeah. Sterling Hall bombing was August 24th, 1970. So it was a Monday morning, early Monday morning when the bomb went off.
I'm sure that people referred to it. People knew people who knew the family. The community was very concerned about outside agitators who had done this. There was some talk of the Weather Underground being involved. In that semester, I believe, the university regents met and raised out-of-state tuition to try to keep this kind of troublemaker out of our state. And there was absolutely no thought at the time that these could be Wisconsin boys.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall your thoughts about the community being concerned about it being an outside agitator when, not that you were an agitator, but you came here from the East Coast, which really was,
yes.
I mean, the concern on this campus
was East. Yeah,
that it was East Coast folks.
Yes. I don't think that occurred to me.
Okay.
With all that was going on. And I certainly was treated fine, treated well, treated receptively.
Do you recall what your attitudes or opinions were about the war before you came here or as you were coming here?
I need to say that I realize in retrospect I've always been anti-war since childhood without ever knowing it as a child or young person. So I generally would not have been in support of the Vietnam War. My brother spent time in Vietnam, drafted. and I still didn't think we should support the war. And being a social worker, part of our basic values are around peace. So it's certainly not, it's certainly antithetical to our professional values. What was the second part of your question about?
Basically, it was your attitudes or opinions about the war, you know, either before you came here, as you came here.
Yeah.
But it sounds like, even though you may not have been voicing it, you were not for the war.
Not for. And I learned an incredible amount in that first year. Every day on campus, whether I walked State Street or around the campus, there were flyers and pieces of paper handed out by all manner of people, many of the students. And I made it my policy to take every piece of paper handed and read it. So I learned immense numbers of things about, for example, offshore oil reserves on outside along Vietnam, and which part was alleged to be promised to which oil company, and so on. So I really have to say that my awareness was raised immensely just by the protest movement and all the persons, whether they were students or not, who handed out and generated literature, paper literature.
Okay. So early on, those first couple of years when you weren't necessarily on campus, and I don't know if you can sort of, you know, associate your memories that way, but early on, you're reading these, you know, pieces of paper that are being handed out, but are you participating or in any protests or any events that are talking about the war?
I did not. Certainly, one of my very first faculty meetings of the social work faculty, I listened to one of our most revered and even then world-famous faculty members, Al Kadushin, still living, who offered a proposal to the faculty that we oppose the war as a faculty. And without much disagreement, that got affirmed and passed. So at the time, the faculty of the department seemed very much opposed to this conflict. I had a student, but I don't remember what year, and so it may have been after those first 5 years while they were still searching for the bombers, who was... Well, I haven't talked to you yet about why I thought everybody was crazy. Students, even our students, came to class in the most remarkable outfits and costumes and ensembles I've ever seen. Now, it's true I was new to university teaching, and I'd come from Hartford, Connecticut, where I wore double knit suits every day. And by the way, I had to give away all my clothing at the end of 2 years when I never wore it again. I needed to buy blue jeans and sneakers so that I could run from the National Guard and also run from the student protesters. And I couldn't run in stockings, little heels, and double knit outfits. So, but I come here and I find people coming to class in what I called Che Guevara chic. They wore fatigue uniforms. They wore opposition T-shirts. They had their hair in huge Afro wild stuff. And they're all in outfits, all in protest, which is okay with me if you sort of are into it and you know what you're doing. Meantime, I had one student who was the dowdiest, maybe 26 years of age, a little overweight. She wore cotton house dresses, and she was very plain and very non-confrontative, and I think looked down with pity probably by a number of the more radicalized students. I learned over time, as I gained her trust, that she actually had connections with the Weather Underground and was working on radical causes, and she believed, and she's right, that you don't advertise it. So there was absolutely going to be no one who ever suspected her, whereas all the rest were in outfits that said, look at me, I'm a protester. So that was one piece of the little part that felt a little crazy to me. If I can tell you some other anecdotes.
Please.
That are not quite on your subject, but on my subject of are they crazy? I was giving a class, or not a class, it must have been a special lecture, at Memorial Union. And it was early evening. I took a break, went to the ladies' room, and there were two young women in there in overalls, deliberately messing their hair so it looked wilder, pulling pieces up and out. And one was asking the other, do you have a date for the demonstration tonight? And I remember this sort of oxymoron for me. Date? A date for the demonstration? How, if you're serious about this stuff, this anti-war stuff, how do you get, like, dates to go and demonstrate? In any case, that was part of what struck me as, wow, this is crazy. So for a long time, it seemed to me, students didn't know what they were doing, faculty didn't know what they were doing. One of my grad students who had been here earlier, through the early years, the early Dow Chemical, whatever, said, this is much improved. You have no idea what it was like before. The police were crazed, they were breaking heads, didn't know. They just didn't know how to deal with student riot. The university didn't know. Students didn't know. He said, now that I'm back, they've all gotten used to being at war with each other, and they know how to handle it, and this is more effective or efficient. I forget the word he used, but it's not so random anymore. So it seemed as if for a fair amount of time we were living in a war zone, and people over time were learning how to adapt to it.
So you said one of the ways you adapted to it, at least it sounds like one of the ways you adapted to it, was making your wardrobe more appropriate for the...
change your clothes,
for
yes.
the situation. Were there
yes.
other things that you, either upon reflection or at the time, did to adapt?
No, I think you always tried to find out where any serious action was. Students were still trashing and burning on State Street, breaking windows, throwing homemade bombs of some kind. National Guard was here, often spraying pepper gas. Before you ventured out, you looked, you tried to find out where things were happening. But I think that the bombing, which occurred, you know, just before my arrival, seemed to do something that calmed the situation down, where people who were extremely upset were still upset, but maybe this has gone too far. This was not what we meant, and backed off a bit. And certainly by the time, and I don't know the year, that Nixon made the draft voluntary, he took the absolute total fight out of the student body. And although they were in this on principle, the self-preservation issue was no longer there, and it just seemed to die of its own accord. Other adaptations. I can tell you about a local restaurant adaptation.
That'd be great.
I was at dinner with a friend at what was then the Ovens of Brittany on State Street on a fairly calm weekday evening, and we were in our downstairs, lovely dinner with a lovely dessert, all low-key. And once we had finished and the waitress brought us our check, she said in the most gracious style that perhaps we'd like to linger a while longer, and that they had someone at the restaurant who would be checking the back door, but there had been some tear gas, which was diminished now. But when they felt it was a clear time that one could safely leave the restaurant, they would let us and other patrons know. And so we waited along with others, and eventually the management came in to give an all-clear signal, and we went directly to our cars and directly home.
Yeah, you. I don't think you would see that at the State Street restaurants in 2013.
Right.
One of the other things, the Ovens of Brittany was the, you had on your email to me about how good restaurants handled after hours tear gas and fires. Is that, that's what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
A couple other things is you had, that you were happy to share a story about how faculty dealt with National Guard advancing on your building.
Oh my, yes. Because of our tiny building, we had to hold faculty meetings in larger spaces. This was at Memorial Union. I still remember, this is an early faculty meeting, maybe in the fall. One of our young field faculty members running up the stairs, bursting through the door and interrupting our meeting, had said, "The pigs are coming, and they're going to tear gas the building." So I was still a nervous Easterner about this. I stood up, looked out, and I could see out the window of our second floor, maybe, just a phalanx of National Guard with all those Darth Vader masks and so on, and the batons just marching, marching, marching. And I must have looked absolutely panicked. The director of field, her name was Evelyn Owens. She had to be in her late 50s or middle 60s, white-haired, came over to me and took my hand, patted it, and said, "Dear, it's okay, sit down." She said, "The building is air-conditioned, and that will somehow neutralize or take care of the tear gas, and it's going to be okay." She finally got me to sit down. And the faculty continued to fight and argue over whether we should change the number of student field hours from 12 to 16 hours. My heart was pounding so hard, but they never missed a beat. I think this is also that they'd been through this for a year or so or more and were kind of adapted.
Mm-hmm.
And there I was like, and got reassured. So I don't know if she was correct about air conditioning, but I know that looking around me, no one else seemed to think that this was more important than field hours. So I sat back down and awaited what would happen. Nothing more happened. The National Guard apparently didn't come into the building. But it was... that's a memory that stayed.
Mm-hmm. You've alluded to this. I'll ask it directly and sort of frankly. Were there times early on that you wondered why the hell you were here?
Let me think about this. No, certainly not related to the Vietnam era. I had no idea that I was in the midst of a historic nexus, because change was occurring. I mean, it all seemed so crazy. If I wondered at all, it had to do with the actual life-threatening experiences of riding Highway 151 in the fog and ice between Beaver Dam and Madison. because there were times there that we passed multiple car accidents, and my VW could barely keep up with the ice on the windshield. But no, I don't think so. I thought everyone was crazed. I couldn't follow. There wasn't a lot of what I thought was careful reasoning. I thought, except with that one dowdy student I told you about. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of emotional, irrational overreactions. And I think it was just a period reflecting the country trying to get used to a major issue. And Madison was one of the center points of that very agitated, confused debate. Is it the large institutions? Is it the oil corporations? Is it the draft? So it was an... I was sure I was in part... I was in a national upheaval, as well as having just arrived and just adapting to a place where nobody seemed very sane.
Okay. again, referring to the email that you sent.
Okay.
You say here, too, that you might want to mention the... You call it the oral tradition of pizza delivery with gas mask.
So I can't attest to this myself, but students and others told me that when they were in their apartment buildings, they couldn't get outside sometimes to go get food because there was too much tear gas while the National Guard was around. They would order pizza from Pizza Pit, and they said that the Pizza Pit delivery truck was actually allowed through the National Guard lines, which I guess not much was allowed in and out when they were flanking an area. It reminds me of kind of Red Cross, you know, you let mm-hmm. them through. And that when the guy would come to deliver the pizza, he was wearing a gas mask. So I thought of it as kind of neutral territory and a wonderful story. I can't confirm it, but somebody might be able to.
Okay, and it looks like the last one you already talked about, which was the co-eds planning to have a date for the... You had it for the revolution, but...
Yeah, I had the word wrong. It was for a demonstration.
For the demonstration.
Yeah.
So when did you... If you can be specific, if not just sort of general, when did you actually... Your office sort of physically move on to campus?
Probably 1974.
Okay. So the war was pretty much over by... Because then the war ended in August of 74, I think. But anyway,
yeah.
So most of what you saw was when you were coming to campus for meetings or for whatever, mm-hmm. whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which is fairly frequent.
Mm-hmm.
Weekly. And living in the city of Madison.
Mm, right. Do you have any memories or recollections of after moving on to campus, students protesting, whether it be Vietnam or some other activity?
There were several demonstrations involving, and I don't know now whether it was only Dow Chemical demonstrations or whether there was later, could there possibly have been recruiting that soon? Of course, I was here through a variety of TA strikes,
mm-hmm.
And some not so serious things like streakers on campus.
A couple of the things I want to ask then, some of the things on the list
okay.
that I gave you, some things that So what did you know of, or did you come in contact with anyone from the SDS when you were here on campus?
I would not personally have known them. My one student may well have been an SDS member, and I sometimes heard news or got written material handed to me that was SDS material. They were active.
Okay. Do you feel comfortable, if you even know or remember the name of the young woman?
I do not know or remember.
Okay.
I would probably hesitate to share it if I did.
Right.
Just because, who knows?
Right. What about maybe not just the Daily Cardinal, but media coverage? Maybe start with the Daily Cardinal. I don't know if you started reading it once you got here, and what you if you did, what you thought of its editorial slant, its coverage of events.
I have to admit, I didn't find it or read it.
Okay.
I was reading fistfuls of paper from the street literature all the time. I trust that the Historical Society got it. Piece of every one of them, and that was in itself a real education.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't read the Cardinal.
So besides these pamphlets or leaflets or whatever that you were tracking down, were there other ways? You mentioned you didn't read the Cardinal, but were there other ways that you were educating yourself either about what's going on campus or what was going on in town?
On campus, one would hear talk and discussions from friends and colleagues of what's going on campus. I'm sure we got messages from the dean and so on every so often, and safety warnings, perhaps. But other than television news coverage and all the street literature, I probably didn't.
Okay. Do you recall a time, or do you have a memory when the war at home ended? Whether, you know, be for you personally, or, I mean, because you talk about how there was this, when you got here, there was this period where everybody just sort of knew they were at war, and you sort of adapted to, do you recall a time just sort of thinking that, wow, this is over?
I do not.
Okay.
I think we would have quieted down gradually. Generations of students graduate and move on, and the new ones would have been less and less politically involved. Repair was pretty fast in the city. New construction seemed aimed to protect ground floor buildings from glass window damage. Obviously, I and everyone else would have been very aware that we ended the war. I think we lost it, and that troops were coming home, and that we evacuated Vietnam. And we would have been aware in social work of the need to ramp up our immigrant services programs for incoming Vietnamese and other persons whom the U.S. evacuated, those whom it did, for new services, new language help, new immigration help, and so on in our program.
Okay. Do you remember anything? It happened, I think, in 73, maybe early 73. Carl Armstrong's trial, well, it wasn't a trial, it was a sentencing hearing here in Madison.
I know it happened. I know that I thought, oh, I wonder if anyone is going to notice we're talking about Wisconsin-based people rather than East Coast. but the out-of-state tuition raise never got reduced.
You mentioned earlier, I'm sorry, did I?
No, go ahead.
You mentioned earlier that you, after you moved here on campus, you were cognizant of some TAA strikes or TAA issues. Any particular events of those strikes or issues that stand out in your mind?
I certainly remember the sense of support and ambivalence our faculty had, because the TAs, we understood their position and their needs, and we also understood that they're asking for resources that the university, if it gave there, might not be resources for departments and faculty. Mm-hmm. I certainly remember that we would be reminded by our department when the strikes were intended, where the major ones would be, and how to think about whether we planned to provide alternative places for classes if our classroom buildings were struck, since most of the faculty were not going to be willing to cross a TA line.
You moved here in 70. You're still here, so I assume you've been here the entire time. So
40, I have been here the entire time.
40-plus years. I'm wondering either what your thoughts or what your involvement was in the sort of the most recent protests, not necessarily on campus, but sort of city and statewide, which would be the spring 2011, winter-spring 2011 protests over the budget repair bill.
Yes. So I was a part-time protester, that is, doing my full-time faculty work and spending my weekends at the Capitol out in that miserable, cold weather, walking around and feeling the same kind of sense of solidarity I had not seen since the Vietnam years. Very moved by not only the union members who came, but those who came from other states to assist, and very moved to learn about the support for this fight in Madison. I don't really think it was just a budget repair bill. For me, this was about democracy. Seriously, it was about democracy. And the right of labor unions and others to organize. I was stunned to realize that those tables set up around the square with hot soup and food and so on were being supported by contributions from around the country and from around the world, especially countries that did not have a democratic system of their own. So I heard from people staffing the tables that the calls they got and the money they got was from Haiti, of all places, Haiti, with all of their troubles, from China. But it was impressive to me, and it felt, I was much more aware of it than I was the first time around. I was now in the center of not only a national event, but an international event, and that this protest really was much more about about democracy and helping democracy to survive. I've forgotten your individual question, and I got a bit up on my soapbox.
Well, it was really to ask just about your opinions and memories about, or if you were involved, and then what your involvement was. So.
My memory was also that there was, and this is Madison's wonderful sense of humor coming through in these difficult times. I'd heard that there were television videos of the problems in Madison showing fighting and disorder, and there were palm trees in the back. So there was a protester who came to these, and his hat now was this giant palm tree that he just wore all the time. I remember hearing someone on the Scott Walker side declaim the protesters as thugs. And I found a young couple with their toddler in a stroller. He was wearing his snowsuit with a little sign over it that said, "I am a Madison thug." And others. I mean, just lovely, lovely expressions of distaste and humor. One farmer from who knows where brought a tractor and was trailing a wooden trailer with what looked like a huge load of manure. It turned out to be made of plastic, thank goodness, but he had labeled it with something to do with Scott Walker's approach to governing. And I was also impressed to see the people who, I think, saw the light. And these were former conservative Republicans who were now very angry about the new policies and wore signs to say something like, I'm a Republican, pro-life, et cetera, et cetera, and I stand against Walker. So there was no humor in their approach, but they were just so taken with, you know, what had happened. So I'm clearly on one side of this one, and I'm very glad it happened. Sorry that the recall didn't succeed, but I think that the protest itself was a signal of encouragement to others. I think other states told us, Ohio did, and others, that they're watching us very closely and that we helped sort of encourage them on their way.
You alluded to this when you talked about the solidarity, but I'm wondering if there were other times or if you had other thoughts that while the 2011 protests were going on that compared in your mind what you were seeing to what you experienced when you first got here in 1970, 71, 72.
It's hard to recover it now. I think that my sudden arrival into a horrible winter, a city under siege from National Guard and protesters, and a nation in chaos would have made it hard for me to fully tune in to the solidarity sense at that time. But I did have the sense that the nation was struggling to come up with something that really was going to be on the path to what is right. That's the best I can do. So the 2011-2010 protests with Walker and the budget bill reminded me of that. At the time that I was in it, I was probably in the 70s less cognizant of it, since it was more of a matter of survival, adapting and figuring out what was going on out here. Some of it was an emotional sense, where you just get a lump in your throat when you see the next group of people walking around the Capitol in the snow and the rain. in a way that united Mexican groups and other Hispanic groups, united Teamsters and AFL-CIO people, united police and fire officers, even though they were being exempted by Walker, along with the very old-time peace movement people, the Raging Grannies and the old-time Vietnam protesters, who were sort of in it for the long haul and not just because of the draft. Did I answer that enough on track?
Rosemarie, do you have anything else you want to say, either about the Vietnam era here on campus or what you saw and participated in 2011?
Giving this some thought.
Yeah, take your time.
I haven't. I think the exercise of talking about something from years ago probably then helps you over time to come from now on to reflect on things further. On reflection, it was tumultuous at the time. So it changed all of the views and roles. I wonder now what has happened to those protesters. Do they, of the first era, that first era, now that they're aging and in jobs, hopefully, do they feel they've sold out? Do they see the country totally differently? Have they changed politically in terms of what they believe in? What's happened to their views? I don't think I'm much changed. I think the great change for me, again, was that street literature and understanding a much larger business and industrial investment in war as something that America likes to have to help us be more prosperous as a nation. So I learned of immense forces and have a much less simplistic view of it now.
Rosemarie, I want to thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.
I thank you for your time.